The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Israel has pulled its troops from southern Gaza, citing tactical reasons as they prepare for the next phase of war. After hitting the six-month mark in Gaza on Sunday, it's believed that the real reason for withdrawal is to give reservists a rest. Now, to help us understand what is coming next in Gaza, Duncan Bullivant, CEO of the Henderson Group and International Risk Management Advisory. Duncan, good morning.
Good morning.
Can you explain to us what exactly is Israel doing and why?
Well, Israel, according to reports both provided by the Israelis and by the United States, which is obviously coordinated, they are withdrawing the majority of their ground troops from Khan Yunis. They're no longer involved in direct action on the ground. And they've left a brigade behind, which is probably about 4,000 people, manning the Nazarene corridor, which splits Khan Yunis from the northern parts of Gaza. And ostensibly, they've said that these troops are being withdrawn to go through a rest and re-equipping, probably some retraining. There'll probably be quite a few reservists being sent home, and they'll be replaced by others who've been called up in the last couple of weeks. And I think we should, I mean, first of all, it's a fairly major signal that they have withdrawn sizable divisional strength troops from the conflict. And we should also look at you know, what's going on behind the scenes with regard to the United States putting pressure on them. But it's not normal to do this at this stage of operations if you're planning to persecute eventually the invasion of Rafah and to continue with the stated war aim of destroying Hamas. So there's a bit more going on behind the scenes here than perhaps, you know, the Israelis would like us to think.
Now, in the opening of the programme, we played a clip of a commentator remarking that Netanyahu, when he sends delegations to peace talks, he doesn't give them the negotiating heft to actually agree to anything.
Yes, and I think there are two things to look at there. First of all, that is a significantly well-trodden path in terms of negotiating strategy, and that is that you don't send the decision makers. You send people who carry messages. Everybody knows that as a tactic. I think anybody who's bought a house hasn't necessarily gone in with their final offer. But I think that the other thing to bear in mind is that Netanyahu's options are very limited, very limited. And every week and every month that has gone by in this conflict, bearing in mind that, you know, it's now 6 months yesterday since this started, is his options are incredibly limited. He's effectively thrown all his military heft at Gaza, and what has he got in return? He's got diminishing returns on the international stage because now Israel's really on the back foot. Last week was a disaster for Israel in terms of public opinion and in terms of the propaganda war. Hamas is still there. Hamas really doesn't care how many civilians are killed because every civilian killed is another victory for them in the propaganda war, and that's a sad fact of life. So I think, you know, looking forward at options and what the negotiations, the detail of the negotiations, you know, you've got Hamas saying that all Israeli forces must leave Gaza before any more hostages are released, which of course is not going to happen, and you've got increasing pressure on Netanyahu and his government, who are at the end of the day, at the other extreme of the political spectrum, who are facing daily demonstrations, increasing in volume and ferocity from the families and friends of the 80 odd hostages who remain, we believe, in Gaza. So it is again, I'm afraid to say, an intractable situation. But right now, Netanyahu is playing into the hands of Hamas.
So what is on for Cairo? I mean, there are kind of some small optimistic noises being made, but what could possibly be the architecture of a deal?
There are conflicting signals coming out of Cairo. The problem going forward is that nobody has actually put forward a sensible, coherent plan But who is going to run Gaza if Israel withdraws? Nobody. There has been discussion about an Arab force of occupation, which has been rejected by Hamas. There has been the usual whittering from external observers about the move to a two-state system. That's decades away. That simply isn't going to happen for two reasons. One is the Israeli government aren't in the mood for it, and two, the Palestinians don't really want it either. So I think your best bet now for Gaza is some form of uneasy but unofficial ceasefire where aid and food distribution increases at a hell of a rate. Yesterday, there were over 350 trucks of food and airdrops going into northern Gaza. So food is getting in. And you'll probably see a gradual trickle of people from the south. There are about 1.5 million civilians trapped in the south now. A gradual trickle through a security cordon put in place by the Israelis back into the north. Obviously, some Hamas fighters will come with them, but not in significant numbers. And I think you're just going to see, and it's always dangerous to predict these things, but I think what you're going to see over the next few weeks and months is a sort of an uneasy standoff with the occasional Israeli precision strike and the occasional incursion, and Hamas regrouping in certain areas, still firing rockets into Israel, but none of the large-scale bombing and large-scale loss of civilian life that we've seen up until now. Because quite frankly, the United States, as we've always said, the United States calls the shots ultimately for Israel's strategic direction. And I think the US have run out of road in terms of defending Israel's current military strategy.
Now, what of the hostages then? We've always said at the beginning that it was unlikely that Hamas would give in to the Israeli demand of handing over all the hostages, et cetera, because that is the only card that Hamas really have to play.
Yeah, I mean, there are 84 hostages still unaccounted for. And 84 people in a nation the size of Israel is a hell of a lot. And these families have a voice. And it's almost like they've been drowned out by recent events. And they're ends up becoming a moral equivalence, not in reality, but there ends up becoming a moral equivalence between Israeli hostages being held in Gaza and Palestinian civilian deaths. And it's a cynical ploy. It's not new. So what? So I think can Netanyahu survive with the current situation? Can he survive politically with the 84 hostages remaining, not rescued? Can he survive? Yes, he can. In the long term, no, of course not. But the long term is not something that Netanyahu is looking at the moment. So yeah. I think to answer your question directly, there is no real pressure on the Israeli government at this stage to finish this hostage situation at all.
No real pressure. So even though the parents, the relatives, the friends of these hostages are mounting vigils and are demanding action, what is Netanyahu saying? Is he saying we're doing all we can? We've thrown everything we've got at Hamas.
Yeah, Netanyahu. This is a really important point. Netanyahu's war aim is to defeat and destroy Hamas, and that is not the same as releasing the hostages. They are in many ways conflicting requirements. And there'll be plenty of Israeli commentators who will come on and say, you've got to defeat Hamas in order to release the hostages. But that's not the point. The point is that if you are serious about releasing 84 hostages, if it is 84, I suspect tragically it's a vastly reduced number now due to deaths and disappearances. If you're serious about getting these people out, then do the deal. Get around the negotiating table and work out what it is you need to get these people out, and then deal with the longer term issue further down the road. Kick the can down the road. But that's not the Israeli government's objective. It is to persecute a war against Hamas, and if they can release the hostages as they go along, That's a nice win. But I think that this is the intractable now. And this is what people are beginning to realize, that Netanyahu's objective is the destruction of Hamas, regardless of the hostage situation.
That expression, we are where we are, given the events of October 7th and then the invasion of Gaza by Israel, this has all happened. And we've got the destruction of Khan Yunis and the razing of much of Gaza. I think over one third of all the buildings in Gaza have been destroyed. But looking at it from this perspective now, was there a different way? Could Israel have done anything different, given the anger that was felt by the population about what happened on October the 7th?
Yes, they could. And it's very easy for me to say that, because I'm not an Israeli and I wasn't affected by the events of the 7th of October. But what I would suggest is that, with hindsight, which is always easy, that Israel has fallen into a rather cynical trap set by Hamas. You see, the point is that Hamas knows Israel and Israel knows Hamas much better than any external observer. Hamas probably gambled that Israel would react in this way. So who wins from all this at the end of the day? You're looking at Gaza, current estimates, which are always low. Current estimates, it's going to take $20 billion to rebuild Gaza. Where's that money going to come from? Well, largely it's going to come from Arab states. So that's a big opportunity for Hamas to get their fingers in the reconstruction contracts. The loss of Palestinian civilians is nothing to Hamas. We know that. That's their ideology is such that it's the loss of life is less relevant to them. They're not a liberal democracy. They can carry on like this for forever. So I think that Israel has now effectively got its hands so dirty, it's got drawn into a very, very dirty conflict where civilian casualties will continue to be an inevitability if they prosecute the war the way they have been up until now. And unfortunately, Israel's run out of support now with its key allies in terms of carrying on with Netanyahu's war aims. So what does Netanyahu now do? Does he pivot and say, "Oh, it's all about reconstruction and rehabilitation, and we've got to get on with these people"? No, because whilst we all know now, I think it's pretty obvious that Hamas has no intention of ever living happily alongside Israel or the Jewish state. By the same token, if you were to go into Netanyahu's cabinet and sit with his extreme right-wing allies, they don't really want to live next door to Palestinians either. So what has been destroyed here? There are two things that have been lost now in Israel. One is that there was a gradual softening of the relationship between Gaza and Israel. The more and more people were coming over from Gaza to have day jobs in Israel. There was a greater economic benefit to Gaza from Israel's staggering economic success in the last 15 years or so. And a rising tide lifts all ships. So life was getting better in Gaza. That didn't suit Hamas. Secondly, you end up with a situation where Israel was moving closer to long-term relationship, good, normal relationships with Saudi Arabia and other Arab partners in the region. That's been put on hold and possibly derailed for the foreseeable future. So Iran has benefited from this. Hamas has benefited from this. I don't see any benefit to Israel at this point. And this issue over hostages is going to haunt the Israeli government over the next few days and weeks. And at the end of the day, I think we are now probably in the last couple of weeks of things being done as they have been, and we will see a fairly dramatic change, or there's going to have to be a change in government in Israel. And that's what we now need to be looking at.
Duncan Bullivant, CEO of the Henderson Group, an international risk management advisory. Duncan, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.